everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm Spencer, coming to you from my new man cave, joined by Silver Pro and newest member of Team, I don't know what your guys' name is, Michael Hinderrock.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good name. I think that the...
You should name your team We Don't Have a Team Name.
Yeah, I think the team name We Don't Have a Team Name is very catchy. It's strong branding.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Well, congrats on getting a team together for the next pro season, Michael. It's exciting stuff, man. I hope that you can chain a couple together and really, you know, move forward this season with your new goal, whatever your new set of goals are.
Yeah, I mean, it's always tough, but I think that we will end up with the infrastructure in place to be successful, and I hope that that translates into playing well.
Awesome. Well, let's, you know what infrastructure is great and already successful is our sponsors at Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off your first order by using the code CCMTG. You can get 5% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood at checkout. No spaces, would that be good? That's actually 4%, I'm sorry. They're going to move it to 5, but I think it's still 4. And that's 15% for the code CCMTG on your first order. And Oasis is amazing. They are... they make it possible for me to continue to play Magic as an MTG dad. Michael works there. They provide us with the cards that we need to, you know, play the Magic that we want to play. You can also check out our other sponsor at the Mana Base. They are awesome. They support up-and-coming Magic content creators like us and like Nika... Excuse me. And like Nikachu. Something's coming up here. I'm realizing his undefeatedness against Mason, and it's just, it's bringing up, you know, making me feel a little vomity. I don't know. No, not really. But but you should check out the Mana Base because they are amazing for supporting this kind of content. You can check out their sponsor at Fusion Gaming. Canadian-based website with tons of singles and sealed products. So if you're looking to start a draft of the new set, this new set looks sweet. Check out Fusion Gaming and check out the Mana Base. We don't have any new patrons this week. If you want to become a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg. Starting at $1 or more per month, anything you see fit is really, really appreciated. It means the world to us when we get those notifications letting us know that somebody else has joined. But we got a really cool notification this week. And it's funny. I got a notification that one of our patrons had added their pledge from $25 to $5. And then I got a text message that was like, hey, I just wanted to let you know why I did this. And it was so funny that they thought that I would be upset. But Aiden actually got engaged. He's one of our patrons. He got engaged. He's adjusting money to save up for, you know, his marriage. And, you know, I'm never going to be upset if you need to adjust your amount. That's why we use Patreon. And instead, I just want to give a shout out to Aiden and congratulate him on his engagement. That is so awesome. And we're so happy for you.
Absolutely. That is really awesome. And that's like, you know, that's a really good reason to
exactly
do basically anything. Yeah,
exactly. So congratulations, Aiden. Special shout out to you. We look forward to seeing how happy you can be. So congratulations, man. No Patreon questions this week. We had a lot of them last week, obviously. So it's understandable that we wouldn't have one this week. But you can expect, if you are a patron of $5 or more per month, you can expect the Deck Doctor question to go up every Tuesday on the Constructed Critics group. And then I will also, what if I adjusted my pledge because I'm salty about fantasy football? You can do that too. You can also, if you're a patron, there will be a weekly poll that hopefully goes up on Wednesdays. So check that out on the Patreon website. So questions, Deck Doctor, all that stuff available for our patrons. Check that out, patreon.com/ccmtg. Let's go on to our next segment, which is the point of this podcast. It's hashtag always improving. I'm sorry, man. I'm sick and I need water.
That's, you know,
understandable.
Yeah. That feels like a thing that's just happening.
Yeah. Hashtag always improving is the point of the show. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all the time to try and improve ourselves. Michael, let's start with you. What have you done this week to improve at Magic the Gathering or life in general?
I mostly just been looking at new cards that are coming out and trying to get an idea of cards that I'm interested in, just cards that I think I'd like to play with. I feel like when new sets are coming out, just trying to find cards that make you curious and interested to see how they play out is, for me, one of the ways that I can get excited about brewing decks and playing Magic in a new format.
Okay. Anything specific sticking out to you?
I really like... I've talked to Matt about this, and Matt does not like this card as much as I do, but I really like the 2-mana blue enchantment that lets you essentially scry on your upkeep. I think you put it in your graveyard instead of the bottom if you don't want to keep it.
And then you have 7 cards
and then flips. And then flips into a land.
Okay. What do you like about the card?
I think it's like a relatively low investment that just has pretty high payoff. Like the mode on the land that it flips to that lets you pay 3 and tap it to find a non-creature, non-land card of your top 4 seems okay. But just having some kind of card selection and essentially what becomes a mana rock, I think it looks like a pretty nice card that doesn't take a whole lot of... I don't know that you need to devote your deck to flipping it as quickly as possible.
Sure. All right. So for me, I'm making some big life changes. I don't know how much they'll like affect the show. I kind of made it a post on the website that you can read up on about kind of the life changes I'm making. With my son being sick last week, I've kind of come to the realization of something that's been true for a while, and I've kind of just decided to accept it, and that's that I'm not a Magic grinder anymore, and that I'm an MTG dad. And I kind of just am more self-aware about that today than I was before. I still plan on going to all the GPs I was going to go to, but I don't plan on grinding PPTQs anymore. I'd rather stay at home and play a Magic Online event, to be honest, than spend a Saturday in a different part of Utah in a store that I don't really want to be at. And I realized that at the last PPTQ that I went to, where I didn't want to go to the store anyway, like I don't like the store, I don't like the way they treat players. And I like felt forced into going there, and I was like, this is stupid. Like, I can be at home with my kid right now, and instead I'm here at this store. I don't like this. And I'm excited about that future, about maybe playing online PPTQs rather than PPTQs, maybe playing some more Modern and Legacy and like bringing that kind of expertise to this podcast rather than just focusing on Standard and things like that. I'm excited to see where focusing on content creation can lead me in my Magic career, as that's the thing that I really like about Magic right now. And it's probably more easy for me than grinding, as I'm a father. So,
yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
So, still hope I hit bronze this year so that I can just go to RPTQs. But, yeah, I'm not going to be trying to grind PPTQs as much. So, well, let's go on to our next segment, which is Card of the Week. Card of the Week is a segment where we want to do it as often as possible. It got erased from the show notes, I think, because we haven't done it in like a month. But I realized that it wasn't in the show notes last week, so I have put it back in, and I want to give out some Bristling Hydra. So we're going to give it a play set of Bristle. I cannot talk, Michael.
Of the card, Bristling Hydra.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to give it a play set of Bristling Hydras. We're going to give them to Aiden. This is not random. I picked Aiden to congratulate him on his engagement. Usually it will be random. You just need to be a patron of $3 or more per month. Congratulations to Aiden, but let's talk about this card. So I wanted to pick this card because I think that it reflects what this format became better than any other card. Other than maybe Attune with Aether, but I didn't want to give out a playset of Attune with Aethers.
Yeah. Yeah. Bristling Hydra's, it's a funny one. On the surface, it is sort of expensive for what you're getting. It's a 4-mana 4/3. It doesn't have any kind of evasion. But it is so hard to kill.
Yeah.
It is so hard to kill.
It's so funny. There have been multiple times on Modo where, you kill their Longtusk Cub early, and then they just, like, play Refiner, and after an Attune, and then they play Hydra, and you're like, man, I wish I hadn't killed that stupid cub until they sunk energy into it so that I could freaking kill this Hydra. But, like, you have to kill the cub. It puts you in kind of an awkward spot.
Definitely. It's just a really good thing to, like, it generates energy in games that aren't necessarily about it being hexproof, so it's always at least okay. But having that hexproof ability, I mean, this card is maybe better than Whirler Virtuoso, even against Mono Red. It's
Oh, it's so good against
extremely
Mono Red.
powerful in that matchup. Just a lot of the... It can outgrow a Hazred on occasion, but even more than that, it just kind of invalidates Earthshaker, Kenros, and Oncrow Crashers and that kind of stuff. And it's just... It's one of those things where there are games where you will play it on turn, you know, four or whatever, and your opponent basically has no outs in their deck.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, as I've been looking at the new set that's going to be coming out and kind of thinking about it is, where do decks like Snake live? Like, where do those style of decks live? And with, you know, Nissa leaving and things like that, it's very possible that we see some kind of resurgence in those style, like energy style of snake decks, and Bristling Hydra can fit into a rule there. And it's kind of weird to think about, like, all the Bristling Hydra decks that were not Teemer Energy that saw play, like other style of energy decks, like Jund Energy played Bristling Hydra, Green Black Energy has played Bristling Hydra in the past. And I feel like we kind of just, because Teemer Energy won out over all of those decks, right? Like, as the best energy deck, I feel like we just forget that those things were a thing.
Yeah, I mean, part of the question ultimately is, you know, what makes these decks good and what makes a deck a better choice than, you know, Teemer or vice versa. But it's definitely a card that stands up on its own pretty well. It certainly doesn't need your entire deck to be focused on generating energy to be playable.
Right.
I mean, you don't really need to be playing Attune with Aether and Rogue Refiner and War. Like, you can be playing kind of a more minimal energy package with... I mean, I vaguely remember people playing just, like, some Glintsleep Siphoners, Longtusk Cubs, Attunes, and some Bristling Hydras in that deck at various times.
Yep. And, you know, did you think that that's a thing that can move forward? As I was looking at, like, how do I win with snake decks, you know, it was like, well, it's probably a Hydra package... with maybe a couple Long Tusk Cubs, definitely Siphoner in the future. But the same thing is, like, at the same time, is this deck even good against Teemer Energy?
It's hard to say. It isn't particularly good against Teemer Energy right now, but it's always possible that the format moves in a way that you want some of the other things that, like, black specifically will give you access to, like maybe Duresses in the sideboard or something. Like, it's so hard to say... now what you're going to want in a format when we don't even have the full next set spoiled.
Right. Absolutely. All right. So those, a playset of those are going to Aiden. So congratulations on your engagement, Aiden. Congratulations on these cards. Shoot me a message and we will send these out at the end of September to when we send out all of our card of the week. So thank you so much for your support, and hopefully these can, do well for you in the next format. Let's go on to our power rankings. So every week on the show, we like to talk about a format, whether it's Modern, Standard, or Legacy, and talk about the decks that are doing well in that format. And we are going to talk about what a lot of people for a long time considered the most diverse format in Magic, that if you are being completely honest, has probably moved into a two-deck format. Michael? What format are we talking about?
We are talking about Legacy, and
would you agree with my assessment?
I wouldn't say it's quite that narrow.
Okay.
But I think that the online metagame definitely leans harder towards that. Just at some point, it probably had to do with the cost of the decks, but. The online metagame in general is very Grixis-centric.
Well, let's talk about the deck coming in at number 5. We have Big Red. So this is a deck that I actually played against at the GP. This deck has gotten a lot of love from Chandra being printed and moved up a lot in a lot of people's like rankings. A lot of people have really enjoyed playing with this deck in the past. And the deck has changed a ton, right? Like, this deck used to be like a Goblin Rabble Master, Inferno Titan deck, and it's kind of changed its overall look. Some people still playing the Goblin Rabble Masters.
There are a bunch of sort of packages that people end up on in these stylo decks, of all sorts of varieties.
So what do you think of this deck in this format?
I am not a huge fan of this deck just generally. I find that it's very inflexible and kind of uninteresting on both sides. But Blood Moon is really strong against you look at the decks that are most played in this format, those being Grixis Delver and the Four Color Leovold deck. And in both those matchups, Blood Moon is incredibly strong.
You're playing seven.
Right, you're playing 7 to 8 plus a bunch of Chalice of the Voids, which are also great in those matchups. Trinisphere is similarly great in those matchups. Right. So I can see the appeal of building a deck this way if prison-style decks are what you're into.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that the deck has moved from that Goblin Rabble Master Inferno Titan deck into more of a prison deck.
Yeah, there was a minute where people were playing like mono-red sneak attack-style decks where they were playing like Seething Songs and a bunch of... old spine worms in this style.
I don't remember that. I do remember like the sneak attack into Inferno Titan style deck. I do remember the Goblin Rabble Master versions. I'm probably just wrong.
It's a little more of a pure prison deck now.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of a hybrid combo deck.
Yeah. What do you think of these fireball effects?
Well, the earthquakes are kind of interesting. They basically just do... They kind of pull the same function as, like, Ensnaring Bridge does in some ways. But then one of the things that they also do is help you kill opposing Planeswalkers, which can be a problem for this style of deck. Fiery Confluence also does kind of a similar thing. And then both Chandra and Koth are very good at killing opposing creatures and Planeswalkers as well. So... there's really a lot of different things going on here, but it all kind of leads to, like, Chalice is going to be good in a lot of matchups. In the matchups where Chalice isn't good, a lot of the time the Blood Moons are still going to be powerful. Like, it's very rare for a deck to be strong against... there are so many different lock pieces in this deck that there's almost no way you can be good against Chalice and Snaring Bridge, Trinisphere, and Blood Moon. I can't think of anything.
I think that the deck has a more clear identity that is more realistic for the deck than just like jamming Inferno Titans or trying to win off the back of a turn one Rabble Master. I think this is more realistic.
I do too. I think that like Chandra gives you sort of a density of Planeswalkers that maybe wasn't there before. And having those as really powerful things to ramp out as well, sort of enables you to go down the like Chrome Mox Simeon Spirit Guide path, where those along with the Soul Lands really they give you a strong identity towards casting like turn one Chalice, turn one Trinisphere, or turn one Blood Moon. And I think that those plus ramping out Planeswalkers, like you look at this deck and it's very easy to tell what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Yep. This deck is also tied, by the way, with Twin Stoneblade.
That's just Stoneblade.
I was going to say, I'm not sure where the twin is coming from. It's listed as Twin Stoneblade. I'm pretty sure it's just Jeskai Stoneblade.
It's actually just every Stoneblade variant. MTG Goldfish just likes to... most of them are Jeskai Stoneblade lists, but it's every...
okay.
Every Stoneblade list, and sometimes you'll see a Deathblade one pop up in here too, so...
I see. So, with the two decks, I think we're kind of done with Mono Red. I do want to touch on Stoneblade really quick. What would cause a deck like Stoneblade to rise up again? This deck hasn't been seen in a while. What's going on here?
So, this deck has a really bad four-color Leovold matchup. It's pretty good other than that. But especially online, four-color Leovold deck is really popular. But this deck is not especially good against Baleful Strix, not great against Leovold. And then just like it has the four color deck has Toxic Deluge and Kolaghan's Command as well. So a lot of stuff that's good against both Trunane Nemesis and Stoneforge Mystic. So that's sort of kept this down a little bit. What I will say is that the Stoneblade deck in general is it's probably good in every other fair matchup. Like you're just playing a lot of really good magic cards. You have a really good combination of threat density and efficient answers.
Let's go on to our next deck, which is Miracles, which is such a funny name for this deck. I feel like it should be called, like, Mentor Control. I feel like we're, like, clinging on to this Miracles thing so hard. But I want to talk about Miracles for a second, and its lack of an ability to do really, really well in Legacy Challenges online. You know, its last 5-1, I think, was 3 weeks ago or something in a Legacy Challenge. I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah, there also isn't really a consensus list. I think the one on screen, there's a guy who has like 6 or 7 5-0s, 3 of them posted in the last week with a Soothsaying counterbalance build that no one else is really playing. So that might be worth exploring if you like Miracles and want to go down that path. But Mentors in the main seems to have become a little bit more of a consensus. Most of the lists that have 5-0'd in the last few weeks have some number of Monastery Mentor in the main and have mostly moved away from Entreat the Angels.
What do you think of Soothsaying as, you know, just a couple of things to be doing with your counterbalances?
So the other lists aren't playing counterbalance.
Right.
And I think that counterbalance is still a powerful card given the density of cantrips and the fact that Jace is also providing a brainstorm effect. I think counterbalance is also relatively powerful with predict, and I think Soothsaying then is obviously also relatively powerful with predict. So Soothsaying is obviously not Sensei's Divining Top, but it is a blue card, so it's good for your Force of Will count. In the late game, I'm sure there are going to be occasions where it can help you find a Terminus. It's interesting. I'm curious to see if this guy, I don't, looks like Stefano GS or whatever his name is. I'm curious to see if he continues to have success with this list.
He's been pretty consistent with it.
But I think they have 3 posted in the last 4 or 5 days. So that's, you know, that shows you that if one person has that much success, that it's probably at least worth looking at.
Yeah. And there are other players that are having success, right? Like, I think that NZD has a Gideon list that he's been having a little bit of success with that plays Blood Moon in the main as a one of.
I know he's a longtime Miracles player.
Yeah. I can't get behind this deck, but I think that, like Michael said, if you're looking for a version that is a little bit more interesting, I would definitely check out the Soothsaying version.
Yeah, kind of interesting to play with to play with counterbalance again. Obviously kind of a sweet card, and it probably does help a little bit. I mean, one of the things with, like, if you look at the list that, like, Anzi has been playing, he's playing the full 16 cantrips, those being 4 predicts, 4 portents, 4 ponders, and 4 brainstorms.
Yeah.
So if you look at that, having that many cantrips is both kind of dirtily, but it also makes a deck, in my opinion, increasingly difficult to play, just in that you actually have so much control over your draw steps and the top of your library a lot of the time that it can be kind of an overwhelming place to start.
Yeah, it can be daunting. I remember feeling that way when I played Delver in Standard. Just like, man, I don't know what I'm supposed to put on top here. Right.
I actually have too many decisions.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's go on to our next deck, a deck that, I mean, if it's gonna creep up here when you have, you know, a 4-color Leavold deck as the top deck, we have Ad Nauseam Tendrils.
Yeah, so it looks like people are maybe leaning away slightly. I'm trying to figure out if it's that MTG Goldfish is misclassifying things again, or that these are actually all... It looks like the 2 from this challenge yesterday, at least, are correctly classified. So people may be leaning away a little bit from the Burning Wish, Rite of Flame, Bryant Cook style Storm decks, and leaning back towards these decks that rely more heavily on Past in Flames.
Yeah, it's a Dark Petition style deck.
Yeah, I think the number of Past in Flames Tendrils kills versus Empty the Warrens kills ends up being kind of the main difference in my experience. It's still tricky, I think, for me to understand this deck's place in the metagame, given just the number of Deathrite Shamans and...
Really?
I really hate playing Storm against Deathrite Shaman, but my guess is that despite Leovold, your four-card Leovold matchup is okay, just because of the number of pretty bad cards they have in game one.
It's actively good.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't resolve Leovold.
Well, I don't know. Here's the thing is, like, it's so easy for you to get to, like, I think one of the reasons to lean to this version is the ability to play Duress and happily play Duress and to actively, like, shift the matchup completely to, I don't care. Like, I'm going to go off when I'm going to go off and I'm going to know that I get to go off. You know, it's like, they don't have that many. Maybe I'm wrong, because I'm still playing 2 to 3 Leovolds every time when I'm playing the deck. But, like, I don't think that... it looks like they're still all playing 2. Like, I don't think that the matchup's that bad for you. And, like, Deathrite Shaman, while it's, like, a good turn one play for them, and they have to leave up mana with it, and you get to dress them out of the game while that's happening.
It's true. And I think that there are, especially in the main deck, there are a lot of cards that just aren't doing a whole lot in that matchup. I mean, obviously the Fatal Pushes and Lightning Bolts, but also the Abrupt Decay, Edict, K-Command, and Deluge are all really kind of blanks.
And I think it could be a reason that you're seeing so much shift in the Leovold style decks, too, is they're much more discard heavy again, probably because of combo decks like this trying to get them.
Yeah, there's also, I know that they've, we'll get into it when we get to that deck.
One question that I do have is, what do you think of, you know, which version would you prefer to play? Are you okay with this, like, basically no, I mean, obviously you can sideboard into the Ad Nauseam, right? So it has it in the deck, it is an Ad Nauseam deck in the 75, but there's no Ad Nauseams in the main deck of a lot of these decks.
Yeah, I haven't played this deck frequently, at least, without... It looks like one of the 6-0 list from today was not playing an Ad Nauseam, opting for...
A second Dark Petition.
Well, they're both playing 2 Dark Petitions. The other one is playing a second Past in Flames.
Okay.
So, that's a little bit interesting. I really like having access to Ad Nauseam, but I also think that this is the kind of deck where sometimes, rather than something being factually correct, it's more important that it lines up how you'd like to play it.
That's exactly what I think.
Like, comfort level is what, yes, I think of when I think of Storm.
So here's the thing, is what is the cost of putting the single Ad Nauseam in your deck that you're going to tutor for when you want to tutor for it? It doesn't matter, right? You can tutor out whatever you want to win the game in this deck, right? Like, you can tutor for that Past in Flames, and if that's how you want to win the game, that's how you want to win the game. I think that, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But the lists are all a little bit different, and I think knowing how to play situations is more important than your exact 75.
I agree completely. Let's go on to the next deck. Coming in at number 2, we have Grixis Delver. I'm shocked that this deck continues to do so well.
Yeah, I mean, this deck really was bad against Miracles, in the old days, but right now it's kind of found a niche where just the card quality in this deck is really high.
Yeah,
and that's, I think it's striking.
It gets almost. I mean, they've from what I've seen, a lot of the lists are going back to Stifle.
It looks like the best finishing one today was really interesting. Actually, a pretty big departure. If you're looking at the one from, I don't know what we have up on the screen. Let's see. The one from Krasik that's on the screen is a little bit more of a classic style. It looks like he's playing Stifles with Probe, which is interesting, but I can sort of understand. The list that was most interesting to me today actually wasn't playing any Young Pyromancers or Gitaxian Probes, instead opting for Snapcasters and I think 2 of Spell Pierce, 2 of Spell Snare.
Yep.
So there's a lot of there's a lot of kind of subtle innovation in this deck, and I guess more than innovation, it's a lot. I think it's a lot like the Storm deck. It's a lot of preference in terms of how you're building the last eight or slots or so.
I do think that this deck has done a good job of taking the place that Rug Delver was taking for a long time, in that mana denial game with the best early creatures.
Yeah, I'd say ultimately the main thing that you get out of black compared to green is just slightly better sideboard cards, and then Gurmok Angler. I mean, obviously you're also getting full access to Deathrite Shaman.
Yep.
But if you basically decide that Deathrite Shaman is better than Nimble Mongoose,
which is,
seems like a relatively safe assumption.
Yeah.
Right? And then you decide that Gurmok Angler is better than Tarmogoyf. This is sort of the natural evolution of Rug Delver.
So this podcast almost used to be a Legacy podcast. Like, we would play Legacy all the time. Like, we would just go to my house and jam Legacy. And so it was like all that Matt Kling and Casey Bloodworth wanted to talk about for like most of the early podcasts. And I got a lot of crap early on for my hatred of Nimble Mongoose. So it's good that we don't have to talk about that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of card that can be really powerful in specific metagames, but I think that Deathrite Shaman's versatility
is just
super powerful.
I actually lost to this deck playing Four Color Leovold at the GP against one of your new teammates for your pro team this year. He was completely on the mana denial plan, and I think that's correct right now for this deck.
Yeah, I know that matchup is good for the Leovold deck in general, but it's very true that the early mana denial, if it kind of gets away from you, can just end a game, end a match before it really starts.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all lost to, you know,
to Delver. Stifle, we've all been Delvered.
Delver days, Wasteland, Stifle, Spell Pierce for the rub-in, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah, I think that Grixis Delver has found an interesting place in that, like, it's trying to beat up on the things that are trying to beat up on the best deck, which is, and yeah, it doesn't have, like, it doesn't have a great matchup against Four Color Leovold. It doesn't have a terrible matchup.
No, I mean, you're playing a lot of the same cards. Your mana denial can be pretty good. If the game drags out, you tend to lose just because of, obviously, you know, you're playing basically every spell in the deck is one mana. So if the game develops beyond the point where that's an advantage, you basically can't win.
Yep.
But there are advantages too. I mean, we're really not actually playing four colors. We're just splashing green so that Deathrite Shaman can exile creatures. The mana is surprisingly good in Grixis Delver if you haven't played it before.
Let's go on to our number one deck. We've hinted at it, you know, only 1,000 times. We have Four Color Leovold coming in at number one. People think that Deathrite Shaman should be banned because these are the top two decks. They've been saying it for a couple of weeks. Seems ridiculous to me.
It's a really good Magic card. I mean, and this deck is really strong. It's really flexible. I think you have the ability to play a pretty aggressive game where you're kind of jamming like Deathrite Shaman into Leovold into Planeswalker, Deathrite Shaman into Thoughtseize into Planeswalker, stuff like that. But you can also really play longer games as a control deck, relying on Snapcaster Mage and Baleful Strix and Liliana and Jace. And I think it's really flexible, and obviously your card quality is insane.
Yeah, I mean, you get to just play whatever you want, right? And it's so funny to, like, see Kulligan's Command in Legacy, like a Snapcaster Kulligan's Command deck making its way all the way here. I love it. I think this deck is great. It's obviously the deck that I play in Legacy. I try and play Legacy every week, and I haven't really found a reason to go away from this deck since GP Vegas. I played a little bit of Merfolk here and there when I was bored, but this is kind of it for me. Like, I really enjoy this deck. I think the mirror, like, all the games with this deck, including the mirror, are super interactive. You know, I've really enjoyed playing with this recently, kind of making me okay with Shardless Bug going away.
I think this deck does a lot of the things that Shardless Bug was trying to do at various times. It just plays, I think it just has a more robust game plan. I think not trying to rely on, like, Ancestral Vision, right, is the kind of card that is really good if you draw it on turn one or if you suspend it, but it's a terrible card to draw. I think just, like, the spot removal in this deck, the ability to actually sideboard counter spells. Like, by not having to play the card Shardless Agent, you just get a lot more flexibility.
I think so too, and I think that you know, Leovold fills a very interesting role in this deck, in that it's a must-kill threat that, like, you didn't really have in the other deck. I do really like Gurmag Angler in the deck. I think that, you know, one of the problems that so many people have come to me with this deck, and they're, like, asking me for advice, is, like, how do you close out games? How do you win fast enough? Like, if you really have a problem with it, just play a couple Gurmag Anglers or one or two. Like, it really doesn't matter, but, like, that's, I do like that as a way to win with games with the deck.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I think just in general, like, with this much removal, just a combination of Deathrite Shaman activations, Snapcaster Mages, and, you know, a Bolt and a Kolaghan's Command here or there, like, you'd be surprised. When you get ahead with a deck like this, you can really slam the door shut just because of card quality. Like, Legacy is not a format with a lot of actual card advantage. There's a lot of card selection, but not that much that's actually drawing you a ton of extra cards. So, you know, if you're able to set up Planeswalkers on uncontested boards, they'll mostly run away with games. And Leovold, what card advantage your opponent might actually have, just completely shuts it off.
Yeah, I find that most of the time I'm winning games with Jace with this deck, to be honest. Like, I'm holding their ground with, like, Baleful Strix and Deathrite Shaman activations, and then kind of just closing the game out with either overwhelming them with card advantage from Jace or actually just Jacing them out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, that's it for Legacy this week. Michael, what would you be playing in Legacy this week and why?
I would probably play... I really like this Forcoliable deck. I enjoy it, and I like how greedy it is, too. I really like that we're playing blue-black splashing for Abrupt Decay and Leovold and Lightning Bolt and Kolaghan's Command, and then we're still playing Wastelands.
Yeah,
that's just... It's great. It's entertaining.
Snap Kolaghan's Command is so fun, dude. Like, that's just a good time.
Yeah, I think this deck is really good. I think the Storm deck is maybe sneakily better position than it has been for a while. I think that really the key is that the decks that are good right now are very interactive. I think the games just actually tend to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, while I think that Legacy is probably more narrow than a lot of people would like it to be, I do think that, like, it's more fun than other Legacy formats that I've played. Like when Sneak and Show was the best deck for a long time, I didn't find Legacy very fun. I, like, really enjoy this format.
Right. I mean, I think if you just look at, like, the top... If we look at the top six on MTG Goldfish, really five of them are extremely interactive. I mean, I would even class, like, Ad Nauseam as quite an interactive deck.
Yeah, and if we include, like, all of the decks that hold up, like, 3% of the meta, that goes all the way down to 9 decks, including Death and Taxes, Elves, and Greenblack Depths. Like, there's a lot of decks. There is.
Yeah.
They're not taking up as much as the metagame, right? There's not a bunch of 5%ers like there has been in the past, but I still...
Well, I think that's also just a factor of the online metagame in general. With the cost to switch being cheaper, people just lean towards playing what they think is best. Yeah. And if that's, you know... Flavor of the Weeks are always possible, both possible and popular on Magic Online, and I don't think that it's anything new.
All right, that's it for Legacy this week. Thank you so much, Michael, for your expertise on that. I actually have heard you've been playing a lot of Legacy recently.
Yeah, I have. I've really been enjoying it. It's a good time. I think that the games are very entertaining.
All right, well, let's go on to our training grounds. Every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or life in general. Today, we are going to say goodbye to Standard and kind of talk about Standard as a whole, what we think about these standards, and how to approach standards and things like that. So, the first thing I want to say is, are you surprised? What happened?
Yeah, it always goes kind of fast. You always are, like, thinking about it as a new format, and then the Pro Tour happens, and then you have a GP or two, and then it's just gone. That's how it is.
That actually was not my question. I actually wasn't asking, are you surprised that it's going? Are you surprised that you loved it so much?
It ended up being better than I thought it might. I got a little bit scared around the Pro Tour that Mono Red was just the best deck by a large enough margin that it was going to not be a very interesting format. I still don't know how interesting the format really was as a whole, because it felt like it sort of evolved in chunks, but there was almost always kind of one
pretty dominant deck.
Yeah. But I did worry that we were going to, you know, months of mono red mirrors and we were all going to be really sick of it. So I'm glad that that didn't happen.
What would you miss from this standard?
As far as decks or cards or anything. What do you...
What is the thing that you're going to miss?
I think I will miss the freshness of mono red being good again was really nice. I don't know if it will continue to be good or if we'll still feel the same about it if it's good for the next, you know, the next 6 months or year. But it was really refreshing to have that deck be great again.
I didn't know that I was going to say this on this show. Like, as I was reading the show notes, I was like, am I really going to miss? I'm going to miss Nissa. I'm going to miss a card that I literally could not stand a year ago. But 3-mana Nissa, I'm going to miss her.
It's kind of a fun one, wasn't it? It ended up being a nice role player in a whole bunch of decks.
Absolutely. You know, like, I tried multiple green-white tokens variants with her since green-white tokens. I don't know, like... I'm telling you what I'm not going to miss. I'm not going to miss Gideon. But I will miss Nissa. And I think that, like, how good she turned out to be versus zombies might be the reason that I'm going to miss her. I just wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, she was good. I would say more than just being, like, super powerful, she was pretty flexible. She ended up working out in a number of different decks. But with how counter-centric a lot of these decks ended up being, between like green white playing Lamhold Pacifist and making a bunch of other tokens, and then green black being Winding Constrictor focused. I was impressed with how good that card ended up being, because on the surface it doesn't really look especially powerful. I'm with you on not missing Gideon. I think it was a relatively uninteresting design that also just slightly too good. You know, just too ubiquitous for long periods of time.
Yeah. I think that I'll miss that. I will actually miss this, like, rotating format. Like, the fact that, like, that blue-black control could win a GP, like, is amazing to me.
Yeah, we had a bunch of decks that, like, cycled through relevance.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan. Like, I wish that I had tried that. And we'll get to that. We'll get to that later, but what was your favorite deck from specifically the standard?
I really liked the Team Renegade deck with Scarab Gods. Scarab Gods is just a sweet card. It was really fun to play with.
Mine is green black, but I think that Brad Nelson's almost exact 75 that he won his GP with is probably number two. So I obviously have like a sucker for teamer decks, so it's actually surprising that I liked green black more than that, but I really, really enjoyed the play of green black and the, like, specifically the Grimflare versions. I really liked being rewarded at that GP for picking to play Grimflare over Sylvan Advocate and having a better late game than some of my, like, I played a mirror where he had Sylvan Advocate, and like when I drew a Traverse the Wall and cast it, he was like, man, like that feels so much better than my Oath of Nissa. And I was like, yeah, it does. Let me grab Riskier Hulk now. And, like, I don't know. I like that deck a lot. I may be biased because, like, I want a PPTQ with it too, but I really enjoyed that deck. I think that Teemer would be number two. And I think one of the reasons that I really liked Teemer is that on its surface, it, like, doesn't feel like you have card advantage, but it always feels like they have to use multiple cards to deal with some of your bigger threats. So you, like, other, and obviously there's Rogue Refiner too, but, like, it always felt like you had card advantage even when you didn't really. Like, even with the God version, like, it's not, I mean, you're, like, creating your own. I don't know, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just the way that you spend energy and the way you generate it and figuring out how to use it in a specific game.
Yeah.
It wasn't always interesting, but there were definitely games where the choices were really impactful and the games and were pretty complex.
I think resource management in general is just like an interesting concept in Magic, right? That you don't get in a lot of other games. And adding more resources just made it more interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah, at least more of a chance to be interesting. I mean, I will say that, to be fair, there were often games where it was very clear that, you know, all my energy was going to do in this game is pump my Long Tusk Cup or make Thopters.
Right.
Or, so, I mean, I'm certainly not trying to say that those games always were interesting, but I do agree with you that when you add another resource that you're looking at managing, there are games where it's closer in terms of how you should be spending it, where you're really trying to plan 2, 3, 4 turns ahead and see, okay, so if I spend this now, what does this mean in the future? And that's kind of fascinating.
What are you excited to see go?
I mean, I think we already touched on this, mostly Gideon. I don't know that I have strong feelings. Well, and it just hung around too long, right?
It felt like it was forever.
I'm really excited for Gideon to go, and I'm really excited for Ulamog to go, because it's just not fun to get Ulamogged or to Ulamog people, really.
I'm excited for Ulamog to go, too, but for a different reason.
And why is that?
Because I just don't want the temptation anymore.
Yeah. No, but ultimately, Ulamog, Ulamog obviously probably not as powerful as Gideon on the... You know, it takes more things going right for Ulamog to be powerful.
It was so crazy. Like, think about how many...
It's not an interesting card to play.
Was there a Pro Tour that Gideon didn't top 8?
I mean, I know up until one of the last, like, through Aether Revolt at least, it had been a finalist in every Pro Tour.
Like, what in the world?
Yeah. And I think Kaladesh... No, Kaladesh, it was in the sideboard, and then... Amonkhet, it would have been zombies versus maybe every top 8. Anyways,
Mason's saying it's in every top 8. So like, it's just I am not opposed to Magic cards being good. It just felt like Gideon was around forever.
Yeah, I think the change in the rotation schedule made him feel worse. Like,
but we had him the same amount of time we'd have had any other Magic card before him.
Before him, but then when you're like, oh, he's going to go away in this time, and then like, oh, actually, he's not going to go away in that time. It feels like it's on the table, and then it's taken away from you.
You know what the other thing is I feel like they didn't test with Gideon, so like they didn't make cards to beat Gideon. Like, they got lucky that Gideon wasn't as dominant, and I don't know.
Yeah, it just wasn't very fun, and I'm excited to see Ulamog go for kind of the same reason. I just think in terms of play pattern, neither of those cards are very interesting. It's almost always very clear how to play them, and it just makes for less interesting games of Magic.
Yeah, another one that kind of weirdly excited to see go is Sphinx of the Final Word. I don't know if anybody's ever played a control mirror against that card. It's like, literally, I resolved one on Modo the other day. It was like the only game that I've won with blue-red control on Modo the other day. And I like resolved it in the mirror. My opponent was like, all right, whatever. Like, concede. And I was like, yeah, sorry. Because like, it's just so uninteresting.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, I can see it for that reason. Fortunately, it never really ended up lining up well enough to matter.
I'm excited
but
to see
I agree
because
from
it
a card design standpoint.
Yeah.
I agree from the design.
And it was so funny because I like played it and I like countered his spell and he had like 7 cards in hand. I was like, why didn't he counter back? And then I like realized, I was like, oh, because he can't. What a stupid Magic card.
Yeah, we're just like, it mostly doesn't even invalidate your opponent's hand. It just invalidates their archetype.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't really. It's one of those cards where it's either bad, like, I forget what card we were saying this about. I think we said this about both Aetherworks Marvel and maybe another one that ended up being bad. But it's either bad or unfun.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the Sphinx of the Final Word thing, right? If there was a metagame where that card had been good, it would have been a horrible metagame to play.
Yes, I completely. I mean, and like the matchup story was good. It was like you just stared at it. You're like, okay.
Yeah, I hope
don't have a card in my deck.
Yeah, transgress the mind. Because that's it.
Yeah. What do you wish you would have tried more in this format?
I wish I maybe would have stuck with Mono Red a little bit longer as people adapted to it a little bit more. I think maybe I underestimated
its ability.
The resilience of that deck.
You know, I kind of wish, this is kind of different, I kind of wish that I had flown to some GPs. I thought this format was really fun. I wish that I had, like, played mono-red at a GP. I wish I could have played, like, green-white ramp at a GP. There were a lot of fun decks. I wish I could play blue-black control at some events. I was kind of sad that it was modern season with such a great standard format, but blue-black control is, like, one that, like, man, I really wish I would have done this. I really enjoyed playing control decks, and this one was good.
Yeah, it certainly had its moment there. It's surprising.
Yeah. What do you think was the best deck from this format?
Probably have to say Teemer Energy, especially after what, I don't know if you watched any of the Japanese Nationals coverage, but I flipped it on a few times when it was in the top eight, and every single time I flipped it on, it was a Teemer Energy mirror match, which sort of drove the point home for me.
I think it's safe to say that Teemer Energy was the best deck. I think we expected that. Like, if you go into the format with all the cards banned, what do you expect to come out on top? It was probably Teemer Energy. Mono Red came out hot, and we were a little surprised by it, and the format had to adjust, but I think that it made sense that Teemer Energy would be the best deck. And I don't think it was by much. I think that there were still other decks that could be viable, but Teemer Energy certainly stuck its flag in the ground by the end of it.
Definitely. I think we were a little bit surprised. I certainly didn't think Teemer Energy would be as good as it ended up being by the end of the format. But it ended up kind of feeling like you had really good sideboard cards with that archetype, and just a lot of really powerful sort of linear aggressive cards too.
Sure. Let's get controversial. What was the worst deck that people thought was good?
I don't know. You first.
Vehicles. I think the deck was like literally unplayable in this format.
Yeah, I think
it's either that or ramp, one of the two. It turned out the green-white ramp was actually good by the end of it. Like, people were just trying to do the wrong thing. But so I'm going to go with vehicle. Like, vehicles was bad. Blue-red control was also bad, but...
Oh, man. Blue-red control is 100% the answer to that question. I thought that deck would actually be good.
It was so bad. I feel like I literally lit $12 on fire in that league.
That deck just ended up really, really not being good. I think vehicles at least put up some results.
It did,
as time went on.
It's like I said, like the best players in the world had been playing vehicle. Like the best vehicles player were still doing well with vehicles. I just don't think that leads to the deck being good. I don't know. Maybe I'm biased here, but
I think it put three in the top eight of, or two in the top eight of.
It did. It put two in the top eight, and the literal best vehicles player in the world. One with vehicles.
No, of the Japanese national.
Oh, did it? Yeah. I see what you're saying.
But I think that deck kind of needed zombies to fall off before it could really be in a good spot.
I think you're probably right. I think the answer is probably blue-red.
Blue-red, man. I thought that deck was going to be good, and it just wasn't. Not at all. I mean, there was no metagame that existed at any point.
It seemed like they gave it so many tools, and none of them lined up against the format.
No.
Which means that it could just be good next season, but it just felt like everything was there.
It could. The problem really is that the cards that we have just don't line up well against mono-red. Mono-red is just an awful matchup for that deck. Ramunap Ruins is a nightmare.
Yep, I agree. Would you want another format similar to this one?
In some ways, yes. I think ultimately, although I felt like there was a best deck, it certainly didn't feel oppressive at basically any point. So I think in terms of having options where there's... I like having some sort of grounding where it feels like, okay, if I can't figure out what to play, this is what I can choose. But it's also nice to feel like there are two or three or four other decks you can play without it just being a horrendous choice. So somewhere between modern and, you know, the green-white token standard. And I think this kind of hit that sweet spot, right?
It's funny because, like, going into the format, I had just wished, I was just thinking all the time, it's just like, why can't just Saheeli Rai be banned and we just have that format? Like, I feel like nothing else needs to be banned. Just unban everything but Sahelirai. Maybe Reflector Mage. I don't know. But it turned out to be a good format. I liked this format. I enjoyed so many aspects of it. I'd be okay with this again. And maybe the bannings were a correct decision after all.
Yeah, it's so hard to say without actually...
Without playing the other format, right?
You know, a format that doesn't exist. But
yeah.
I think in the end, this version of this format was... It was good. It was maybe not the best ever, but it was firmly on the good side of things.
It makes you like look at it and be like, did Smuggler's Copter really need to be banned? Is Smuggler's Copter that offensive? But
at the same time, you didn't spend the whole time you were playing this format wishing.
No, I had
you
this,
know what, right. Exactly.
I spent the time having fun.
Right. I think that the games were mostly good, and they found a good balance for what made decks good in this format.
So, I don't think that we'll be doing the set review next week, but I think instead we'll be revisiting an old topic about, I'll ask the patrons. So I'll do a poll for the patrons, but one of the options will probably be, how to attack a new standard format. If people like that one, we'll do that one. If they like other stuff, we'll do that. But you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to vote on, the weekly topic, and I'll present a couple of options that I think that people will be interested in. So. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hiderocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
Did you see somebody's suggestion for your new Twitter handle?
I did. It was a good one, huh?
I laughed so hard.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard. So are you getting men's
rompers?
Team men's rompers?
I mean, I don't know that a romper is a gendered garment. you know, we'll have to speak with the sponsor about that.
If the sponsor's sure. paying for them, then of course you're getting them. you can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Hallen. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast every week on mtgcast.com, constructivecriticism.com, and here on YouTube. Excuse me. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at CCMTG. You can gendered garment. You can like the podcast on Facebook, and you subscribe here on YouTube. Every subscription means a lot. You can also check us out at patreon.com/CCMTG. You can join the conversation by going to the Facebook group. That's Constructive Criticism Family on Facebook. If you're a patron of $5 or more per month, you get access to the Constructive Critics group, where Michael posts about his obsession with Bant Eldrazi all the time. You can... he nods. You can...
I'm not going to argue.
You can join the Discord channel. All of these links are on the bios page at constructivecriticism.com. You can also join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13H or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYP. Hashtag Will That Be Good. Hashtag Will That Be Good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. And, Michael, why don't you read our first hashtag Will That Be Good?
All right, hold on. I gotta pull this up.
Pull it up and find the date.
Yeah, let's see. It's the 11th today, so... the emotion, this is from Andrew Elliott. The emotion at Spencer13H show during the latest CCMTG podcast was great. You are the man, bro.
Should have seen me after it while I was watching the video that Mason made me, because I was like bawling my eyes out.
I mean, what if it said you were the bro man? Would that be better or worse?
Worse. I feel like that would be worse.
Okay.
Michael, did I cry too much?
I mean, no. It's kind of a personal question. I don't know.
I don't know.
How do you feel about how much you cry?
I got feedback both ways, so I don't know. I've been doing this for so long.
It feels like a weird thing to solicit feedback on. Like, I don't really care how other people feel about my emotion.
I didn't solicit the feedback. It was just given to me. I thought I'd get yours.
Sure, it feels like a weird thing to give feedback on.
I'm a crier, okay, people? I'm a crier.
Sure.
You should see me during SportsCenter highlights when they, like... So today, for example, they, like, followed the guy that was, like, the PR guy for the Chargers, whose wife had Huntington's disease. I'm bawling my eyes out. Like, who wouldn't cry at those things? So, like, when I had, like, achieved 200 episodes of, like, this thing I put all my time into, I'm gonna cry. I'm a crier.
Andrew also says, I talk about Eldrazi Tron so much that it is now a phone on my that is now an option on my phone's autocomplete. Hashtag, would that be good?
Nope.
I mean, because it's Eldrazi Tron, nope, but I mean, I'm pretty sure my phone does stuff like that too, so.
Yeah, mine also does that for all kinds of magic stuff.
That's just life. It's
one
of those...
My phone auto-corrected constructive criticism to constructed criticism, and that made my day.
Oh, man.
That was a win.
That's impressive. Phone probably fights back against that one a lot.
It used to. So, my burn opponent decided not to play any creatures in game 2 or 3 after they had triple guy on game 1. Hashtag I'm good. Well, so most of the new burn decks are actually only playing 8 creatures total. So, I actually think that is more likely moving forward than less likely.
I think it makes them harder to play against, too, just because I felt like when you...
Even bolt.
Well, right. You still, like, a Goblin Guide can still run away with a game if it ends up dealing you 6 or 8 damage, but at the same time, it's really awkward if your opponent is like, you know, suspend Rift Bolt, and you're like, okay, I'm not going to bolt you because you could still have a creature, and they're like, you know, pass, and you're like, I guess I bolt you. I bolt face on end step. I've had that happen a couple of times recently where just playing against less creatures makes the play patterns really awkward.
And that's true. 5-0'd my first constructed lead. Played well except for 2 bad decisions in the last game. Hashtag be good. Hashtag better lucky than good. Hashtag modern. That's just the slogan that Adrian lives by. You know, that's how he won our fantasy league last year. That's how he's 5-0'ing leagues today. He's just better lucky than good, man. Just better lucky than good.
Man, that was harsh.
It's all your fault. It's all your fault. If you just set your effing lineup.
I mean, I think I did. I think that there were like 2 late scratches. My memory is that I had Ezekiel Elliott, and he missed a game that was like a... You know, we were in the last week or whatever, and it was like a Sunday night game, and I just couldn't get anyone else.
New Man Cave is up and running. Hashtag other be good. Dude, Devin is a genius. I mean, so for those who know, Manny Merez moved in with me, just super awesome. Love Manny. And I was super worried that I was going to like have to go upstairs and share my man cave with my wife in her she cave. And like, I was not excited about it. But we made it work down here in the basement still. My man cave shares the living room with Manny, and it's exciting. I like it. I like it a lot.
Because now you can yell things at each other?
I mean, I haven't tried yelling anything at Manny yet. Should I
it
wake
seems
him
good.
Up? I'm sure he's
I mean,
asleep. That would be rude.
Yeah, you don't have to do it right now.
I mean,
You can wait until 3 in the morning and then yell at
him. Oh, and then do it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it's good. And the lighting's better in here, it feels like. So.
Nice. Always fun to figure out a way to use the space.
Won my first PPDQ with Eldrazi Tron. Officially sold on Karn being better than Ugin. Hashtag with a good hashtag finally. How are you not sold on that before?
Well, congratulations on winning a PPDQ. That is really awesome.
No. It's Andrew, and he won with Eldrazi Tron.
I mean, so... It's not... I'm not going to support him in playing Eldrazi Tron, but the good thing is now he doesn't have to plague any further modern events with his presence, and he can move on.
I would like to say congratulations, Andrew. I'm really excited for your future in Magic that doesn't include him playing Eldrazi Tron for another year.
The problem is it does. Probably this RPTQ is modern, isn't it? I assume, since they're feeding modern PPTQs into it.
Spencer, help me with my fantasy football lineup. Coming for your throat. Are you ready for it? At Adrian D. Carr, 92. Hashtag, would that be good? I mean, I don't know about helping. I just made sure you couldn't log in, so I made sure that your lineup was legal. It looks like you're going to lose, though. So
Adrian replying with, that card, like your team, is barely playable.
What card? I don't understand.
I assume go for the throat.
Go for the throat. I don't understand what's happening. What was it? Mason, talk to me about this tweet. What is the Taylor Swift reference?
All right. Well, now they can hear me. So, Are You Ready For It is her newest song. And so I was referencing that. And then go for your throat is one of my football friends, Trey, says. He says, I'll come for your throat. So I did that as well, because that's how I figured sports ball people talk about.
Oh, I sports was ball.
Sports ball.
Okay. All that's right.
The end. There you go. Later. Right.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you guys all next week. And, I just can whoever is on Mason's team score some touchdowns already. Thanks, guys. Bye, everybody.
See ya.